Well, there's allegedly an ancient papyrus that says that Jesus was married. What do we make of that?
It's time for The Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Michael Brown is the director of the Coalition of Conscience and president of Fire School of Ministry. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. That's 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Well, it is that time of the week, friends. You've got questions. We've got answers right here on the Line of Fire broadcast. Michael Brown, delighted to be with you. 866-348-7884. I'm broadcasting live from Valley Stream on Long Island. And it's really neat to be out here. Not only was I raised on Long Island, born in New York City, raised on the island. Nancy and I met on Long Island, married on the island, spent our formative years here on the island. But there are folks in the churches here that knew me. In fact, I'm sitting next to a gentleman that knew me when I was getting saved and when I got saved. And this Sunday, I'll be speaking at Bethlehem Assembly of God. That's in Valley Stream. So it's right on the border of Queens and Long Island. 8:30, 10:30, 12:30 Sunday morning, and then 6 in the evening. So if you're anywhere around listening to me on WMCA, WLIX, please join me for a special time together. If you want more info, go to my website, askdrbrown.org, and just scroll down to the bottom of the page. You'll see it in the itinerary. Okay, it's Friday. You've got questions. We've got answers. Anything you want to ask me in any area of expertise that I have, anything having to do with Bible, theology, Bible translation, church ministry, controversy, moral, cultural issues, apologetics, any of those things, any things we talk about on the air, or if you are upset with the program where I had Professor Doug Grotius defending voting for Romney. I was not the one defending it. He was. I asked for dissenting calls. If you're upset with me over that, call in, because we've got some emails from people not happy with me about that. 866-348-7884, the number to call. I'll get to as many questions as I can and your e-questions as well. Let me start off, though, with this issue of this papyrus that was discovered, and a professor who's actually written about Mary Magdalene and Jesus. So she already has her views on this. Said, wow, look at this papyrus. It's in Coptic, which is an Egyptian-related language, and a lot of the Gnostic documents, these false gospel documents, Gnostic gospels from several hundred years after the New Testament, they're written in Coptic as well. And this text, it's a fairly limited text, but it seems to speak of Jesus and his wife. And he was married. Dan Brown was right. Da Vinci Code is right. First, at most, if the inscription or if the papyrus is being read accurately, and it's fairly fragmentary, if it was, it just reflects later heresies. We know heresies existed. We know the Gnostics had heretical beliefs. We know all kinds of things were taught. This is several hundred years after the Gospels. So they're heresies. What if you discovered some Mormon writing and it had some weird teachings? Does that mean that that's what the Bible says? No, of course not. So that's the first thing. The second thing is the reading may not be accurate. Anyway. And the third thing is there are some scholars who are experts that said it looks like a forgery. Whole thing looks like a forgery. We don't even believe the text is real. The script doesn't match where it should be. So nothing to even get worked up about, excited about in the least. There is nothing to it. We know heresies existed. We know some people put those heresies in writing, and they were hundreds of years after the true gospels, which is why they were never received as part of the canon of scripture and never part of the creeds and never part of what was passed down to other believers. And again, we don't even know if this reading is accurate. As one who studied ancient texts and I got my PhD in Near Eastern languages and literature, I'm familiar with these types of things. The reading is uncertain, and some even think it could be a forgery. So much to do about nothing. 866-34-TRUTH. And when we come back, I want to read a few things that have been written to me from people who are very upset about the show. I guess it was this past Tuesday with Professor Grotius, and we'll air these things out today on The Line of Fire.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
All right, I'm going to go to the phones as quickly as I can. 866-348-7884 to join me on The Line of Fire. As always, if you can't get through, write in with your questions. Our staff will respond, or I'll respond, or we'll answer them on the air. Just go to askdrbrown.org and click on contact to communicate with us. All right, I guess it was Wednesday. I had Professor Doug Grodice on, who wanted to defend why Christians could vote for Romney. Many of you have said, I can't vote for Mr. Obama for various reasons, but I can't vote for Romney because he's a Mormon, or I don't believe he's a real moral conservative, or I have other issues. I said, all right, here's someone who wants to defend it. I can't defend it aggressively. I'm not sure that I could vote for Mr. Romney. I'm still weighing it. I know I can't vote for Mr. Obama for various reasons. So I asked everyone to call in who differed. Some people were very upset with me for saying, if you're a Christian, you can't vote for Obama. I am of the conviction that we as followers of Jesus cannot vote for any pro-abortion candidate. That's simple. They may be great on 100 other issues. It's just like if I lived 150 years ago, my position would have been, you cannot vote for a pro-slavery candidate. I don't care how many other issues there were. I could not in good conscience vote for a pro-slavery candidate. I cannot in good conscience vote for a pro-abortion candidate. That's simple. And I don't believe, as followers of Jesus, that we can be complicit in having blood on our hands. If abortion is truly the murder of the unborn in the womb, the most innocent, unprotected citizens of our society, then we cannot vote for them. And in particular, there's a real satanic attack on the African-American community with horrifically high rates of abortion. And Planned Parenthood always targeting the inner cities through the years. To me, that's not compassion. That's destructive. So I hold to that conviction. I don't care who the person is. Now, I'm not sure that Mitt Romney is a true pro-life candidate. He's strongly saying things now. His vice president is. I'm not sure he is. So I'm not endorsing a candidate. You can get mad at me. And someone on my website, The Line of Fire site, said, how can you damn us to hell for voting for Obama? I'm not. I didn't damn anyone to hell. Now, there were some folks upset with me. I want to read a couple of emails that were sent in. Wanda, in the last few weeks, you've stated that your program is not a political one and that the focus is on Jesus. Really? Just check the last few months through your archives and see how rare your discussions and your personal opinions of politics really are. If you're serious about focusing on the Lord, you might want to think about another approach or simply declare that your program is a Christian conservative political program. To be honest, I want your program to be non-political. I'm greatly disappointed when you lapse into these discussions. Hey, Wanda, thank you for taking the time to write, and thank you for writing graciously. I just beg to differ. I beg to differ in your assessment. I do look at what I speak about. I do look at what the issues are. We will touch on politics, but listen to conservative talk radio, and Mr. Obama is being blasted 24/7 for every possible thing imaginable. And then listen to liberal, mainly liberal TV, and Mitt Romney or Republicans will be blasted day and night. That's not what this show is about. So check the archives. I encourage you to do it. I can go through what I talked about through the week. And we had 1 hour out of 10 that focused on these things. And when I'm critical, say, of things in the Middle East, I'll refer to the administration so as not to single out Mr. Obama. So it's part of what we do. Wednesdays, our focus is on the world, moral cultural issues. That's part of what we look at. But we look at it from a kingdom perspective always. And because we touch on so many different issues, it guarantees that we will not focus on political issues. So I'm with you in terms of emphasis. I believe we've been true to that. However, I would say that your assessment of what we've covered is not accurate. So let's both do this, all right, Wanda, because I appreciate your input. Let's both go to AskDrBrown.org. Let's look at The Line of Fire. It's 2 hours a day. Let's look at what we've covered over that time, say the last 5 weeks, and see how many are primarily political. Fair enough? Someone else wrote, Ms. Grant, Dr. Brown, I listen to your show every day. This episode about voting for Romney was beneath you. The PhD you had on should be able to make a case for his preferred candidate without having to refer to the movie made by Mr. Dinesh D'Souza. Conspiracy theories are not becoming. I stopped listening, didn't want to hear anything about birthers. You may not agree with his policies. That doesn't mean you have to disparage the man or ascribe motives to him that are sinister. He has a different political point of view. This is American. That is okay. We can disagree in this country without being un-American or any other foul name calling that takes place. One would think that on a Christian program, more care would be taken. I wish you all the best. Thank you for the wonderful past programs. I won't be listening anymore. Best wishes. Ms. Grant, can I just appeal to you to live out what you suggested to me and to say, okay, we can have a difference without writing each other off? And my whole reason with having another guest on was because I cannot personally zealously defend Mr. Romney. I'm looking for a Christian that can come on to defend voting for Mr. Obama. I'm happy to debate that person. I'm happy to have people from various persuasions come on to have public debate and dialogue. I don't even know what the 2016 movie by Dinesh D'Souza is about, but I don't think he's a birther. I don't think he's a conspiratorialist. If you've seen the movie, then please correct me on that. My guest made his point, and I asked everyone to call who differs with him so we could have a discussion. That's what it was about. And if you noticed in the broadcast, if you listened through it, I specifically made the point that I can't defend Mr. Romney like this. I think it's healthy to have the discussion. I think it's healthy to interact in this particular way and for people to talk these things through, especially the issue of can we vote for Mr. Romney as a Mormon. I was asked on an interview earlier this week, if I was the Apostle Paul, who would I vote for? And it really made me think. And I said, I don't know. I might sit out the election, or I might vote for a third-party candidate. I'm not sure that I could vote for – I know I couldn't vote for Mr. Obama. I'm not sure I could vote for Mr. Romney. So I'm anything but some flaming right-wing Republican, but please allow us to have a forum where we can have our differences in a public way. Is that okay? And if I am of the conviction that no Christian should vote for a candidate who has the blood of abortion on their hands, can you allow me to have that conviction? And can you reexamine yours if you're willing to vote for such a candidate? 866-34-TRUTH. Mary in Jersey City, New Jersey, thanks for calling the Line of Fire.
Thanks for taking my call. You know, I have three quick reasons why I cannot vote for Romney. And the first reason is in Deuteronomy 17:14-17, I'll just read it very quickly. It says, when you enter the land the Lord your God has given you and have taken possession of it and settled in it, and you say, let us set a king over us like all the nations around us, be sure to appoint over you the king the Lord your God chooses. He must be from among your own brothers. Do not place a foreigner over you, one who is not a brother Israelite. The king, moreover, must not acquire great numbers of horses for himself or make the people return to Egypt to get more of them. For the Lord has told you, you are not to go back that way again. He must not take many wives, or his heart will be led astray. He must not accumulate large amounts of silver and gold. So to me, when I look at that scripture, I believe that the Old Testament is just as applicable to our lives today, most of it, except for the sacrificial laws or whatever. But I believe that that scripture is telling me that I cannot place Romney in authority over me if I don't believe that Mormons are Christian. The second reason is that abortion is, I'll go very quickly. The second reason is that abortion and homosexuality are not the only issues we should be concerned about. In Matthew 23, Jesus was faced with Pharisees who were tithing and believed that because they were tithing, that entitled them to higher status spiritually. And we now believe as Christians that, many Christians believe anyway, that because they don't believe in homosexuality and abortion, that's all there is in the Bible. But in Matthew 23, Jesus was very, concerned about, he said the most important issues were justice, faithfulness, and mercy. These were more important. Any Christian who thinks they should vote for Romney or any Republican should read the book of James. The book of James is very clear that God is much more concerned about the broader social issues rather than being fixated on one issue.
I got to jump in, though, because we have a break. I would absolutely profoundly differ that justice and mercy is looking at socioeconomic things while we slaughter unborn children. If you say, I can't vote for a Republican because I don't agree with their socioeconomic policies, but I'm going to vote for someone who kills babies in the womb and encourages it with policies, that to me is hypocritical. If you have to sit an election out, I have no objection to that. But actually, I've got a couple more seconds. Give me your third point, Mary, because we've got a couple more seconds.
Okay,
Go ahead.
The third point is that 80% of the country are Christians. So the people who are having these abortions are all supposedly Christians. We need to stop blaming the government for abortion and start speaking directly to the Christians who are having the abortions. Challenge them to live what they believe.
Oh, yeah.
Because 80%, I mean, it's not, they're not atheists who are having the abortions. They're all Christians.
Right. They're professing Christians. The problem in America is the church is not living as the church and professing Christians. I totally agree with you. I would only say that justice, mercy, and faithfulness, if it doesn't start with the least of these, with the weakest of these, if we forget that God judged Israel for slaughtering their children and giving them over to idols, if we don't realize the parallel there and how much premium the Torah puts on preserving life and saving life, then we're missing it. So to me, it's both and. In other words, I have no issue if someone says, I can't vote for the Republicans for this, as long as that same principle says I can't vote for the Democrats for this. So that means either we sit it out or third-party candidate. Thank you for the call, though. I appreciate it very much. We'll be back with your call. Stay with us.
Give us strength to always do what's right.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Thanks for joining us, friends, on The Line of Fire. Michael Brown, delighted to be with you. It's Friday. You've got questions. We've got answers. 866-34-TRUTH. You know, I've said over and over as we get into the election season, we must keep our focus on Jesus and what we're called to do as believers and set a better example than that of the world. And it means we'll have to talk through differences together. That's one reason I raise issues, is to talk through differences. If I was a glowing, fervent supporter of Mitt Romney, then you could say, why are you making this political? That's not the case. I have grave reservations. I've written articles. I just wrote an article that you can call the Democrats godless, but don't make the Republicans the party of God. Come on. How can you call me biased or pushing a political candidate? And I hope you can respect the fact that there are some issues to me that are non-negotiable. And that's my conviction before the Lord. I hope you can respect that rather than say, well, I'm not going to listen to you anymore. 866-34-TRUTH. Okay. Just to stay on this subject. One more moment. Lisa in Great Neck on Long Island, you wanted to comment about the 2016 movie by Dinesh D'Souza, which I have not seen.
Oh, I hope you see it. We saw it twice. This is not a hit job on Obama. This would help your audience. It explains how he grew up with Frank Marshall Davis, communist, and how he sees Israel. He sees Israel as the entire Jewish state, as an occupied state, an occupied territory on Arab land. So this man will always hate Israel. And we're voting for Mitt Romney. I mean, I cannot believe that caller before is worried about his abortion or his being a Christian. He wants four more years of Obama. The Middle East is up in flames. Iran, he's letting Iran get the nukes. It'll be containment. I mean, he doesn't care about Israel, plus our economy here. And you have to even think about who you want four more years. Obama's a disaster.
All right. Well, at least just to ask you a quick question.
Sure, honey.
In the 2016 movie, you're saying that it was not emphasizing that Mr. Obama was born in Kenya.
No.
Okay, got it. All right. Just want to make that clear. Hey, thank you for the call, Lisa. And if you differ with any of the assessment of Mr. Obama, that's fine. That was not our major subject. 866-34-TRUTH. Let's go to Mike, also in Jersey City, New Jersey. Thanks for calling The Line of Fire.
Hello?
Yes, you're on the air.
Yeah, I just had this question. When you mentioned that new document that was found that, you know, talks about Christ having a wife or whatever, how exactly would that alter the doctrines of grace and who Christ is and all this? I mean, that's the only thing I'm curious to know.
Yeah, well, first, all we want is truth, of course. And if something's not true, then we want to expose it. So the fact that this may even be a forgery, and if it is accurate, the reading may not be accurate, and then even so, it reflects a later myth. All of the early records preserved spoke of Jesus, Yeshua, as not being married. There's a conspicuous absence of that in his life in terms of in the Gospels themselves. And then Paul, of course, writes later about the other apostles having wives. And if he didn't, you know, himself, then why would that be a problem, you know, supporting him if he wasn't bringing a wife along? But with reference to Jesus, the issue would be if he was married, he could have potentially had offspring. And since he was the second Adam and the unique Son of God and fully man and himself born of a virgin, then for him to have offspring would have some type of mixture or some type of potential divine seed in the earth. So that would be the real issue. Does his blood still atone? Is he still the Son of God whose virgin born dies, rises from the dead? Yes. But if he was married, then there would be the potential of offspring, and that creates various problems. Also, the image of Jesus being, in that sense, married to the church, you know, he is the divine Lord, and is the humanity he takes on only goes so far. So that would be the real issue to it. And that's why it's something that heretics have held to at different times, and Dan Brown sensationalizes in his Da Vinci Code book. But it would be an issue because marriage means potential procreation, and potential procreation with the Son of God joined to a mortal woman would be problematic.
Yeah, I understand what you're saying. And I was curious because I hadn't heard of, historical documents referring to him being single or anything like that.
Every reference, any recollection in the early church would refer to him as that, and that's the way he's presented in the Gospels. There are disciples that he has. There are women who serve his ministry, but he never has a mate. He never has a female companion. He lives singly. He dies singly. That's the way it's remembered by the early church, and it's only later heresies that would claim anything to the contrary. And there's a reason they claim it, because of the potential of union with another human being, either him just being a regular human being or the potential, like the Da Vinci Code nonsense, that there would be some type of offspring. But thank you for the call, Mike. It's a fair question to ask.
All right, thank you.
All right. 866-34-TRUTH. Hey, I will get to as many calls as possible. Just stay with me. I'll be getting to the next half hour. Again, a reminder to our friends that are not able to listen on your stations to the full hour, just go to my website, AskDrBrown.org, click on the Line of Fire. You can keep listening now, or you can subscribe by free podcast. All right, I seem to hear, in the midst of the sacred time on the biblical Jewish calendar, a time where we should especially be praying for the repentance and salvation of the lost sheep of the house of Israel, I hear some music playing.
We come to you.
That's the voice of my friend Mark Chapinsky. Some of the songs on his Israel's Hope CD, Straight from Israel, are toe-tappers. Some are deep devotional worship songs, some proclaiming the salvation of Israel. And we're probably the first ones to announce it on a national level here in America. We have his CD. This is the last day that we'll be offering this, a special offer. It's called Israel's Hope. Mark was well known for years traveling with Paul Wilbur and Renee Bloch with the trio Israel's Hope. I knew them back then and often ministered together with them. It's 14 songs, Messianic Jewish praise and worship, $15 postage paid for the CD, which will bless you. Like I said, there's toe-tapping, rejoicing music. There's deep worship music as well. And if you love Messianic Jewish songs, this is one of the best new CDs to come out in a long time, and it is straight from Israel. So call or order, get as many copies as you want, 1-800-278-9978. That's 1-800-278-9978. One more time, 1-800-278-9978 to order Mark Chapinsky's brand new CD. We'd love to send it out to you. And again, I want to encourage you, we're going to be getting into increasingly volatile times in the political realm here in America, right up to the elections. As believers, if we have different perspectives, let's talk about them face to face. Let's not write each other off. If I say my conviction is this and you have a different conviction, well, let's make a biblical case for it. And if we differ, let's differ in a way that's different than the political rancor of the world. Let's put Jesus first and exalt him and talk through, pray through, work through our differences.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown.
your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Get into the line of fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Well, thanks for joining us on this Friday. You've got questions, we've got answers, coming your way live from Valley Stream, Long Island, not far from where I grew up here on the island. 866-348-7884. Want to go straight back to the phones with Selma in Rockville, Maryland. Thanks for calling the Line of Fire.
Thank you for taking my call.
You're welcome.
I have a couple questions, but first I want to say how much I appreciated hearing about this lady, Susan, who was visited by Jesus on her birthday.
Oh, you mean Sarah, the old 88-year-old Jewish Sarah. Our dear friend. Yes.
Sarah, I'm sorry. Okay, one of my questions was when Eve was being told her punishment from God, it said that women would be saved in childbearing. Could you explain that to me?
Yeah, that's actually, Paul wrote that to Timothy. And in 1 Timothy, the second chapter, he's talking about how Eve sinned, and because of her sin, the judgment that followed. And then, of course, part of what was going to happen to her as the part of the curse on woman was that in pain she would bear children. And what Paul writes, it could be interpreted as saying that the woman will be saved by having children. In other words, you want to go to heaven and be saved, you have to have children. That's obviously completely contrary to the gospel. Another view is that she will be saved through the childbearing, meaning the child Jesus that was born to Mary, Miriam. Oh. That's another possible interpretation. I don't know how likely it is. The third interpretation, and the one that's most likely to me, is that she will be saved through childbearing, preserved through childbearing, if she is a follower of Jesus, a godly woman. You have to remember, in the ancient world, many women died in childbirth. Many women died because of the trauma of it and lack of medical care. And here's a promise, like, yes, there is a curse that came down. And part of this curse is found in the pain of childbearing. But fear not, God will preserve you through it. He will save you through it. The Greek word sozo can mean save, deliver in many different ways, not just spiritually. And I think that's the best interpretation of the text, that she will be preserved safely through childbearing, so don't worry about the curse. God will keep her safe.
Thank you.
And second question?
The other question is about the crucifixion, where it says, "And by his stripes you are healed." But I've always been taught that you have to go by what is there around the. And to me, it doesn't talk anything about physically healed, which so many people claim. What is your idea? I think it's spiritually healed.
Yeah, Selma, it's actually both and. It's Isaiah 53 that you're speaking of, the Hebrews, Uvachavra tonir palano, and at the cost of his wounds, there's healing for us. And the prophets really didn't distinguish in a hard way between spiritual and physical. In other words, when the inward person was restored, it would bring healing to the nation. And it's quoted in 1 Peter, the second chapter. Now, there's no question that the context there is primarily spiritual. I agree with you. He says that the context is, by his wounds you were healed. You were like sheep going astray, but now you've returned to the shepherd and bishop of your souls. But if you put in the word restored rather than healed, think of the restoration that comes to us through the crucifixion. Think of how our minds can be restored. Think of how broken marriages can be restored. Think of people who are physically healed. So it's first and foremost spiritual. I agree with you. But because it's first and foremost spiritual, it also affects the whole human being. How much did Jesus pay for? He paid for everything that will ultimately include our physical resurrection in the future. So I'd say it's all available. We may not receive it all in this world, but it's all available, spiritual first and the rest as well, by faith and grace. Thank you.
God of light, hear our cry. Send the fire.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Thanks, friends, for joining us on The Line of Fire, 866-34-TRUTH. I want to have on the air with me one of these days a Muslim who's a religious Muslim who can give me his perspective, probably be a him, not her, but his perspective on whether the rioting taking place in the Muslim world is representative of true Islam. A discussion I got into the second hour yesterday saying, is that true Islam, or is true Islam your nice neighbor who abhors this violence and is a professing Muslim? That's another subject for another day. 866-348-7884. We are taking your questions. It's Friday, which means you've got questions. We've got answers. Back to the phones with Hayal in Gaithersburg, Maryland. Thanks for calling The Line of Fire.
Hi. My question is, what do you think the worship of the beast is?
I'm glad you're asking a question rather than saying you have it all figured out in detail and do I agree, because it's a great question. Let me explain why. Revelation, the 13th chapter, talks about this beast, talks about the number 666, talks about having the sign of the beast, and without that, you can't buy or sell or presumably eat or drink, and what's going to happen. You know, the whole world worships the beast, and yet at the same time, we know there are believers in the world, because it speaks of a multitude no one can number that's coming out of times of great tribulation. In Revelation, the 7th chapter, then there's a mention of this Antichrist figure in 2 Thessalonians, the 2nd chapter, who sets himself up as God in the temple of God and so on. The question is, how do we interpret Revelation? How do we interpret these passages? Is this all a future event that will happen when there is this future Antichrist figure? Is that the case? Was it something that was relevant to the first century church, and it's speaking of the Nero, the Caesar-type ruler of the day that ruled the Roman Empire? Is it of spiritual significance? So to me, we have to sort those issues through and decide exactly how we understand the larger issues. Let's say that we believe that the book of Revelation is all future, that the passages about what's going to break on the earth are still future, which I think you can make a good case for. Not the only case, but a good case for that. It would appear to me then that there will be a world ruler that will seduce those who are outside of Jesus. 2 Thessalonians speaks of those who refuse to believe the truth, that they're going to perish because they don't love the truth, and that's why they'll be deceived. So when it speaks of the whole world, it doesn't mean every human being. It's talking about people from all the nations turning to worship this one. How would Jews worship a false Messiah that also Muslims would worship and follow? Well, somehow this figure will be so powerful, so seemingly anointed, so politically strong, bringing some type of apparent world peace. 1 Thessalonians 5, when everyone's talking about peace and safety, sudden destruction is going to come, that there's going to be this universal false following and even adoration of this figure who appears to be the peaceful world ruler, enough to seduce these other religions, but the true believers will not bow, will not follow him. And just like in many countries of the world today, to follow Jesus could cost your life. That could well be the case there. And that will also usher in great revival among the people of God. When evil is more contrasted, the people of God are often more revived. But if we see, for example, a Nazi Germany and how a Hitler swayed that nation, And if we look in a North Korea and see how these ridiculous leaders are given divine status, we see that this can happen with human beings. Human beings can be deceived on that level. It would just happen on a more worldwide level, while the people of God, of course, stand strong in the midst of it. So that would be how I understand it, if this is indeed future, which I think it will be.
Well, in order to answer that question, it seems to me, first of all, we need to know what the beast is.
Well, if we're referring to the beast, we're referring to this Antichrist figure, this world ruler that Scripture speaks of in some other passages.
Well, in one place it says the beast is red all over and full of blasphemous names. So how would that point to a like an emperor or, that type of figure.
Why couldn't it? If these are symbols, Book of Revelation is full of symbols and visions. If you've got symbols and visions in the Book of Daniel that represent individual rulers or kingdoms, it could refer to the person and their kingdom and rule and sway as well.
Yeah, well, just to raise a question about that idea, the beast is red all over and full of blasphemous names. Does that describe an emperor or a single powerful political figure?
It certainly could have described a Hitler. It could describe a regime. It could describe a country. It could describe a system. That's why I'm saying we can't be dogmatic on it in advance, because there's ambiguity. It's not laid out. In other words, I'm not arguing against your interpretation. I don't know where you're going with it. You could be right, but it's ambiguous in terms of what the text is. 2 Thessalonians 2 is clearly speaking about an individual, though.
Oh, yeah. It talks about the man of sin, the son of perdition. So, yeah.
Right.
Certainly sounds like an individual, but okay, let me just say what I think about the beast is red all over and full of blasphemous names. That sounds to me like when you see these movies about the Roman army, they always wear these red uniforms.
Okay.
And they had these standards, and the standards had the names of prominent families on them, and they marched along, and they show it in the movies sometimes. They had marched with these standards, so there it was, the beast red all over, full of blasphemous names. It seems to be talking about the Roman army.
Oh, it could be. Like I said, it could well be that the Book of Revelation is dealing with things that happen in history, so it's of spiritual application in every generation. But it was written for the early church in terms of dealing with some of the issues that they faced, and a crazed Roman emperor, and then Roman army and marching it. It could well be. In other words, I don't have an issue with that interpretation. I'm simply not dogmatic, and I'm giving you a potential futuristic view. But hey, thank you for calling in. I appreciate it. And that discussion proves some of the point that we cannot be dogmatic about these particular things. 866-34-TRUTH. All right, back to the Jesus being, all right, we won't take that. A few folks wanted to talk about the allegation of a papyrus with Jesus being married, and it doesn't matter, but we'll move on. Let me go to Tyrone in Bealeton, Virginia. Thanks for calling the Line of Fire.
Hey, thanks, Dr. Brown. How you doing?
I'm doing well, thanks.
Hey, I just wanted to make a comment. I want to say thank you. Truly, God bless you, because it's your point about voting your faith. It is so crazy. I'm just ordained as a minister in the Baptist faith, and how the church is almost bewildered on how to vote a Mormon in and still say we're Christians. I mean, the ramifications of that are just astronomical. I mean, 1 John 4:3 says, anyone that does acknowledge Christ is, that's the spirit of the Antichrist. Anyone who says that Jesus was created and Jesus and Satan are brothers because they're both created, and that one day they'll all be gods. I mean, it's crazy to me.
Yeah, I mean, the fact that Mormonism is a cult and Mormonism is a serious error that deceives many, and many Christians think, hey, these are just fellow believers. Obviously, they present themselves as fellow believers, but they certainly believe we're wrong. They certainly believe we're deceived, and we don't have the truth. We should say it as forthrightly as they do in secret about us or in some of their documents. But, some would say, look, we're not voting for the bishop or for the pope or for the pastor. We're voting for the president, and many of our presidents have not been godly. Some of them have been professing Christians and haven't been Christians. But I have no argument with someone who says I can't vote for Mitt Romney because I can't see putting a Mormon in office. I have no argument with that.
You know what's really funny?
I personally, to me, my bigger issues are, is he a true moral conservative? Does he hold to the things that I believe are really important in his heart of hearts? Will he govern accordingly like that? But I respect the fact that many could not vote for him as a Mormon. And when I did an interview for a friend on his radio program earlier this week, I said, I don't know that Paul would vote for a Mormon because Paul had made such a big issue of heresy. And even though the president will not be promoting a doctrine, the fact of the matter is, if this person was president, it does give potentially more credence. Hey, Tyrone, I got to run. We got a break here, but thank you for calling in. And look, I've got people, 866-34-TRUTH, I got people writing me that are really upset. How dare I say that I'm not sure about voting for Mitt Romney? And if that gives us four more years of President Obama, how dare I say? I'm not trying to make anybody happy. Can I make that plain? I want to serve you with truth. I want to get you thinking. I want to be a voice of moral, cultural, spiritual revolution. Jesus changing us, and we go and change the world. But I'm not trying to get you to like me. I'm not trying to say the right. If I try to get one person to like me, I'm going to get someone else to be my enemy. I'm trying to get God's favor and minister truth to you as best as I can. And then you sort it out. Is that fair? We'll be back.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Welcome back, friends, to The Line of Fire broadcast, 866-348-7884. You've got questions, we've got answers. Back to the phones with Cody in Beaumont, Texas. Thanks for calling The Line of Fire.
Hi, Dr. Brown.
Hello.
There, I had a question regarding, a friend brought it up to me, and it is true, the Isaiah, I believe I had it right, 45:7, I don't have it with me here, but it's where he's, you know, I am the Lord who's done all these things, I have, you know, create light and create, or well-being and calamity. Some translations, you know, say calamity, but I know the original is, and you being, the study of the Hebrew, you know, and all that, I figured you would like your insight on it. Where it says evil, but, you know, to me it seems like it would be wrong to credit him for those for evil. So I just wanted to your take on it.
Yep, you call the right person. I can help you with that. Yeah, Isaiah 45:7, for example, in the King James, it has God saying, "I make peace and I create evil." But you'll find many other translations. The New Jewish Version create woe. The Complete Jewish Bible create woe. New Living Translation, which is a mild paraphrase, I send good times and bad times. New English Translation, create calamity. NIV, create disaster. ESV, create calamity. There's no question that's what God is saying, especially when you see it's in contrast with shalom. So the first half, he's the one who forms light and creates darkness. And then it says he makes shalom. So that's well-being. That's not even so much used as a moral term here, but well-being, peace, wholeness. And then he creates ra. The Hebrew word ra fundamentally means something bad. When God does it, it's talking about disaster. He will bring ra on the city. Doesn't mean evil. It means he will bring destruction, disaster. When it's something a human being does, I am doing ra. That normally would be evil in context. So there's no question that the right translation of that is create calamity or create woe. And it's talking about God can bring blessing and shalom, especially for obedience or for people who honor him, or he can bring destruction. He can bring calamity, which is his act of judgment. It absolutely, yeah. 100% does not say that God created evil.
And that's from the context, that's what I had gotten as well, but I didn't really know how to, you know what I mean, convey that to this gentleman who was
just say that the Hebrew word fundamentally means something bad, and if applied to a human being doing a sinful act, it's evil. If it's applied to God bringing judgment, it means calamity. And then point out that it's in contrast to shalom, which is well-being, wholeness. Thank you for the question, Cody.
Thank you.
All right. I don't want to major on the Romney issue, but I'll take one more call. Mary in Houston, Texas, thanks for calling The Line of Fire.
Yes. I just had some comments, especially like for the pastor that just called in and, you know, says, you know, how could you possibly vote for a non-Christian? Well, Obama's not a Christian either. But something else I wanted to focus on, you're not just voting for the president, you're voting for everything that the party stands for. And if you think about it, and most Democrats don't even think about it, every anti-God organization in this country from the, you know, the atheists and the communists and the Citizens Against Religion and Citizens for Separation of Church and State, ACLU, that always bring lawsuits to, you know, get rid of the crosses. You can't pray in school. You know, you can't have a Christmas program. Now it's a winter holiday program. All of these groups are associated with the Democratic Party. And if you consider why they win a lot of their cases, they put, when they file a lawsuit, they put them in Democratic judges' courts, the Clinton appointees, the Obama appointees, a few Carter appointees left, who are of like mind. If you look at Obama's judicial appointments, I mean, they are horrendous. So many of them, you know, when these child rape cases come up, they let the perpetrators go. One of them, this, I can't think, he's an Asian guy.
But, you know, yeah, tell you what, just to jump in because of time here, Mary, you raise an important point in terms of larger issues of where parties stand and the ACLUs of this world. Where are they associated with or the those that are fighting for, quote, separation of church and state in these radical ways? Those are fair questions to raise, and I think things that people need to consider. So, Mary, thank you for weighing in and sharing that. Okay, just a word for everybody. If you're online and you can hold a few more minutes, I'm going to take your calls in the first part of the next hour. So if you can hold just a few more minutes, I'll get to your calls. You can stay right there. You don't need to do anything. Do you value the ability to weigh in with your view without me having to give complete agreement or disagreement? Do you value talk radio where you can call in and say something that I totally agree with and say, okay, thank you for sharing that. I agree with that, but thank you. And someone else calls in, they totally disagree, or I differ with you. Thank you for sharing that. Or does everything have to be in conformity to one view only? Or should different views be aired? If they're going to be aired, hey, you're going to agree with some, disagree with others. That's why we're talking it through. And that's why we'll teach and lay out clearly what we do believe to give you as much solid foundation as we can. All right. I think I've got time for one more music clip. I don't know what it is yet, but let's take a listen.
Who has believed our report? And to whom is shown the arm of the Lord?
Oh, yeah, Isaiah 53, read to music. I don't want to give out the phone number to call the station when we're at the end of our hour. 1-800-278-9978, a great Messianic Jewish praise CD straight from Israel. My friend Mark Chapinsky, his first solo CD. He sent it to me. I said, Mark, we're going to make it available to our listeners. This is our last day, $15 postage paid. And really, if you knew the price for that we got them for and what we're getting them to you for, this is just a way of distributing them. This is not some money-making ploy on our end. We want you to get these. You'll be blessed. And it's a great CD. I want to spread what Mark is doing. 1-800-278-9978. 1-800-278-9978. If you can help with an additional donation, and better still, if you can become a monthly torchbearer. I just met with pastors here on Long Island and New York area, and without shame, I said, hey, help me pay to be on the radio in greater New York. Help me foot this bill, which is our largest bill anywhere in the country, because we reach the most people potentially right here in greater New York. So as I'm broadcasting live from New York, I talk about this. Help us meet this bill. Help us meet our obligations. Be a monthly torchbearer, and that means every good testimony that comes in, every life that's touched, people who come to faith, people who get on fire for God, people who then come to our school and get sent out on the mission field, you literally share in the reward of every one of those. Those who are torchbearers support us with at least $25 or more per month. So stand with us. Go to our website, askdrbrown.org. Click on support. My bottom line today: politics will continue to divide us. Many social issues will continue to divide us. Let us unite around Jesus and burn bright for him without compromise and with grace. Well, the Christian family is wondering, is it okay for them to use any form of birth control, or do they just trust God for how many babies they have?
It's time for The Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Michael Brown is the director of the Coalition of Conscience and president of Fire School of Ministry. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. That's 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Well, it's Friday. But there's something different. Oh, yeah, we're live. And yes, you've got questions. We've got answers. We'll be doing that, taking your calls on any areas of expertise that I have, anywhere I can help you with solid biblical wisdom. My joy to do it. Doesn't matter how controversial, how hot the issue, we're glad to tackle it here. But what's different is this. I don't sound any different. Nope. It's our normal high-quality radio broadcast. What's different is that I'm broadcasting live from Long Island, and Tuesday... actually, my mom's birthday, Tuesday, her 90th birthday. We celebrate her birthday Monday, and family's driven up or traveled in from Maryland, North Carolina to be here. So I'm ministering on the island through the weekend and broadcasting live from Valley Stream, Long Island. So welcome to The Line of Fire, 866-34-TRUTH. Hey, I want you, when you call in, to be really nice to Andrew, our call screener, because we've got one woman who, according to Andrew, hates me, and I would gladly talk to her, except she calls in, jams up our phone lines, rants, yells, he can't say anything, and then she just tries to call back. So when you call in, be real nice to Andrew. Even if you're really mad at me over something, be nice to Andrew. 866-34-TRUTH. Before I go to the phones, Chino, Brother Brown, my question is this: concerning the gift of a word of wisdom and the gift of a word of knowledge, can these gifts be separate from each other? Do they go hand in hand with each other like a rainbow? Can you please give me an example how I can tell one from the other? Because I'm having trouble how to differ one from the other. We're talking about the gifts of the Spirit that Paul lays out in 1 Corinthians, the 12th chapter. And there are two ways to read this: word of wisdom being a message of wisdom or a message of knowledge. These would be inspired messages that someone would give, one conveying truth and knowledge and information, the other with special wisdom application. Those things, that would be one way of reading it. Another way that's commonly understood in among charismatics and Pentecostals is that a word of knowledge would be where God reveals certain information. I was preaching one time, and there was a guy in a service that was mocking what God was doing during the meeting. And I asked the Lord to share about this person with me, and I began to talk about it, not identifying him, talk about him being a pickpocket, and talk about how right before the service he was boasting to others about how smooth he was as a pickpocket. I said, there's someone here, and I described him. The smile went off his face. Pastor called me the next day, said, what was that word about the pickpocket? I told him who it was for. He said, yeah, that man left under the fear of God. That would be a word of knowledge, a word of wisdom. Say, when Joseph, in the book of Genesis, has the word about the coming famine. And then over a seven-year period, there's going to be 7 years of plenty, then 7 years of famine, so you need to take from the plenty to get ready for the famine. That would be a word of wisdom, not just information, revelation, something that would help. Jesus sees Nathanael under the fig tree. You could call that a word of wisdom. In Luke, the seventh chapter, there's a woman washing his feet who's a sinful woman. And the Pharisee thinks to himself, Simon the Pharisee, if he knew what kind of woman this was, he wouldn't let this happen. And it says Jesus answered him. He answered what the guy was thinking. That would be what you would call a word of knowledge. Or Luke 19, Zacchaeus come down. How did Jesus know his name? Those were things revealed by the Spirit, word of wisdom, as interpreted by many charismatics and Pentecostals. And it's difficult for us to know exactly what Paul was writing about, because it's from a distance. That would be then that special application of wisdom to a given situation. You don't know what to do. There's a crisis. There's a difficult case. And the Lord just drops wisdom in your heart. Do this. This is the solution. That would be a distinction between the two, as many of us understand them. All right, back with your call. Stay with us.
Fire we want, for fire we please, and the fire. It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Thanks for joining us, friends, on The Line of Fire, 866-348-7884. It's Friday, which means you've got questions, we've got answers. Coming away live from Valley Stream, Long Island, where I'll be ministering this weekend. Let me go to the phones with LeVar in Houston, Texas. Thanks for calling The Line of Fire.
Hello, Dr. Brown.
Hello.
Hello, how you doing?
I'm doing great, man. I'm blessed. Thank you.
Good. Hey, congratulations on your mother turning 90 years old.
Yeah, you know, one of our callers yesterday said to please wish her the love from the listening audience. So that's going to mean so much. She often listens to the broadcast, and I'll call her, and she'll say, yeah, you talked about this the other day and this day. So that's very kind of you. Thanks for sharing that, LeVar, and I'll be sure to pass that on to my mom.
Yes, sir. Okay, well, I just want to begin with a statement. I believe that, well, we know President Obama isn't a Christian. I believe he may be an atheist. And, I mean, that may not hold water, but I believe he may be an atheist. And I just have a question about the Mormon doctrine. It's concerning the doctrine of the cursed lineage, the cursed line. Because I heard a talk show host comment on the cursed line, and I would just like for you to kind of explain it and give me a better understanding, or anyone else who would like to have a better understanding of what that is. Just give us a better understanding. And if Mitt Romney has ever been associated with that teaching.
All right. Now, when you say cursed line, are you talking about black people being a cursed lineage or a cursed line?
From what I understand, it comes from Cain and Abel. And because Cain killed Abel, he was cursed with a mark. And I believe that that particular doctrine teaches that if you have dark colored skin, whether you're black, Indian, whichever, which if you have any color skin that's not white, that would mean that you would be cursed.
Right.
And I understand that the Mormon Church actually removed the doctrine. I believe
right. The Mormons in fairly recent years opened their doors in a significant way to a non-white population, in particular to blacks, to be part, which would then also mean there'd have to be some repudiation of teaching, that their revelation was off. Now, we're on, of course, right now in Salt Lake City and broadly over Utah. If you are a Mormon listener or a former Mormon, would like to call in and comment about that, about this cursed line teaching, or about how it was changed or removed, please do it. But a fair question, LeVar, has been raised, whether Mitt Romney himself has ever repudiated that. I think it's a fair question to raise. Someone should raise it at some point, even though he's not running as a Mormon. He's running generically as presenting himself as a God-fearing man who wants to keep God in the public square, and he wants to keep God in the Republican Party platform and so on, and contrast it with the Democrats removing God or having only one reference to God in their party platform. Some have said, has he ever repudiated that? And some might say, well, if he's part of the Mormon Church as a whole, they've repudiated it. But again, if you're a Mormon out there listening, especially in Salt Lake City, but anywhere else in the country, in KUTR, if you are a former Mormon listening and you want to raise that criticism, feel free to call in and share more about that. But for sure, this was a historic teaching. There are others that argued based on Genesis 9 in centuries past, some that were professing Christians, some that may have actually been Christians but terribly deceived here, that the curse on Canaan ultimately meant a curse on blacks, so that blacks were universally inferior, another horrible doctrine that some Christians did hold to, but it's based on a complete misinterpretation of Scripture with nothing whatsoever to back it. So we'll see if we have more discussion about that, but thank you, LeVar, for raising that point. I appreciate it.
And Dr. Brown, you know, I'm not naive. I know that there may be racism in each and every Christian denomination, and that's not the issue. It's just, you know, it's just a question that I would like
to... Oh, no, I understand that. But when it's church-sanctioned racism of any kind,
those things must be
addressed, repented of, repudiated, and then you have to get to the fundamental question of how did we make such a serious, terrible error, and how
Thank
can we
you,
be
sir.
Sure we're not repudiating it? Thank you for the call. God bless you, man.
Thank you. You too.
All right. 866-34-TRUTH. So again, feel free to call in if you are a Mormon listening or a former Mormon and would like to address that issue further. I'd be glad to hear from you. 866-348-7884. Okay, just to catch you up, the first hour on Wednesday, so the hour before this one that you're listening to, I had on the air with me Professor Doug Grotheis from Denver Theological Seminary, who wanted to present his case as to why Christians could and should vote for Mitt Romney. So some of it was negative on Mr. Obama, and some of it was why Mitt Romney would be the best candidate, even though he's a Mormon. So I asked everyone to call in who differed with that. I asked everyone to call in who differed with Professor Grotheis and who felt as a Christian we couldn't vote for Romney. I made the statement, if you're a Christian, you can't vote for Barack Obama. Why? At the very least, because of his radical pro-abortion stance, and then also his wanting to legalize same-sex marriage. The implications of those are massive. You say, well, we can't just vote based on one thing. Well, there's certain things that are non-negotiable in my conviction. If I lived in the days of slavery, I don't care how good this candidate was on national security and economy, if they were pro-slavery, they wouldn't get my vote. If they're pro-abortion today, they won't get my vote. I don't know where I stand on Mitt Romney. I'm still evaluating it. How true a moral conservative is he? And then others raise the issue of him being a Mormon. And I've said some might want to vote for a third-party candidate to make a statement. Some may sit out that election and vote for other parts. I don't have an issue with that. And again, allow me to hold to my convictions before God. And if we differ, let's prayerfully and respectfully differ. Fair enough? We're going to be enemies because I have a conviction that no Christian should vote for a clear pro-abortion candidate, or no Christian should vote for a candidate who wants to redefine marriage. You say those aren't the only issues. Fine. But that disqualifies that candidate. Now, you may disqualify the other candidate, too. That's fine. But I'm not going to compromise. I'd rather not vote than compromise. Obviously, some have an issue with that. So let me take one more call on this point. And then some of our callers from Salt Lake City, I want to hear from you about this Mark of Cain and the cursed lineage issue. So we'll be getting right back to you in a moment. But Reginald, we lost Reginald. That's okay. He just wanted to make the point that if you vote for a third party, then in effect you're helping one party or the other. That's fine, but you have to vote your conscience. Okay, let me just stay on this Mark of Cain curse line point for a moment. Tracy in Salt Lake City, Utah, thank you for calling in. So I understand you used to be a Mormon.
Yes, I was a Mormon for 10 years.
All right, so tell us what you know about this.
Okay, and I just want you to know I consider myself at that time a lay Mormon, so I only know what I was told and what I had researched and read in the Doctrine and Covenants, etc.
Got it. We won't make you into a high priest or apostle today. That's fair enough.
Thank you. Okay, so what I was told when I was Mormon, yes, the mark of Cain, as a result of his disobedience, was actually that given to people of dark skin. Now, in 1978, I believe it was Spencer W. Kimball, the prophet, who then said, okay, we are changing things up a little bit, and now we will allow blacks, and especially blacks, to now have the priesthood. They had previously, because of the Mark of Cain, been prohibited from having the priesthood. And so now if you see the seven, the quorum of the 70, the apostles, you'll see people of, you know, of dark skin, including blacks, now are able to participate.
Yeah, so the question, and thanks for filling us in further. If anyone wants to give more details, that's great. But thank you, Tracy. The question is, it's one thing to say, let's say you're a Protestant, right? To say, uh-huh. Okay, we were studying the scripture, and we had a wrong interpretation of the Bible. And we look at it, it's clear it was wrong. We read something into it. We justified the slave trade by verses in Exodus about slavery, but there's no connection. We repudiate that was wrong. But it's not a matter of revelation. It's a matter of interpretation. It's another thing when a group like the Mormons will say, we have revelation on this issue. We have revelation from God. And then later on, you have to say, oh, we're updating the revelation. And that, of course, undermines things a lot.
Absolutely. And therein lies why I am evangelical Christian and no longer Mormon, because I didn't join because of my agreement with all the doctrine. I joined because I love the community. And just to let you know, regarding Mitt Romney, and I feel that having been affiliated still as an evangelical Christian living in the Mormon community, wonderful communities with great values, with that mark of Cain and with her doctrine, there is not bigotism or racism.
Got it.
You
all right.
You don't have that.
Yep. Tracy, thank you for the call. I appreciate it very much. Back with more of your calls, your e-questions. Stay with us.
It's the Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Thanks, friends, for joining us today on the Line of Fire, 866-348-7884. That's 866-34-TRUTH. You've got questions. We've got answers. We'll go to all right, we lost Gisela in North Andover, Maryland. Let me grab a few more calls that are coming in from Utah. Thanks so much for responding as you're listening on KUTR in Salt Lake City and beyond about the issues of the cursed lineage or the cursed line, the mark of Cain, skin color, where Mormons have stood on that issue. Jeff in Salt Lake City, thanks for calling. Are you a Mormon or a former Mormon or something else?
No, but my half of my family, the line is Mormon.
All right.
And I've known the Mormons for a long time. I mean, all my life, basically.
Got it. Yeah. So enlighten us a little bit more.
But there's two issues when it comes to skin color. There's the mark of Cain, but there's also the idea that there was a war in heaven and people were given the choice to decide whose side that they were going to take. And there were some people that were fence sitters. And the ones that were fence sitters came to the earth and with as the way it was worded in their documents, dark and loathsome skin, and the ones that took the correct side were white and delightsome.
Now, has that ever been addressed the way the Mark of Cain issue was addressed?
They just ignore it. And they took it out of their documents and changed it.
All right, Jeff, thank you for the call.
But there was another thing that I wanted to comment on the fact that Mitt Romney changed his position on abortion right before the primary started.
As far as Mitt Romney, my big issue with him. It's not that he's a Mormon, although I know many Christians have that as an issue. My issue has to do really with how deeply pro-life he is. Now, I know he's held to these positions for some years, but when he governed in Massachusetts, people have really accused him of not being a true pro-life candidate. In fact, making abortion available for, $50, and of opening the door to the redefining of marriage. Now, his views did shift at a certain point. The question is, was it political pragmatism? Was it the way to be elected as a Republican national candidate, or was it true convictional change? So that's one of my great, deep concerns, Jeff, which you just raised there, why I hesitate, because I don't know if I'm voting for a true pro-life candidate. So, Jeff, thank you for the input and for raising that issue. Let's take one more call. Don in Syracuse, Utah. Man, Syracuse, I think New York. How big is Syracuse, Utah?
Oh, it's just a small rural community.
All right. Are you a Mormon or a former Mormon?
I am a very active LDS Christian, yes.
Oh, okay. So you're a Mormon. So tell us your perspective on the Mark of Cain issue and how, if that was revelation that came, that could be changed or adjusted at a certain point in history. I'll let you speak.
There was never any revelation saying that the black people should not hold the priesthood. There was, however, a long, lingering social issue like most other Christian churches of the early 19th and 20th century about blacks. That's one reason the Southern Baptists became a separate congregation, because they had an issue with the blacks. The LDS belief is that, and has they have stated, is that we're sorry, but a mistake was made in the social position, and that we did receive a revelation saying all people should receive the rights of the priesthood. My
right,
question
so
is, why, if the church has made that change, why is it necessary to continue to beat up and complain and criticize when the rights have been given to all people?
Well, here's what I'd say, Don. I've been doing talk radio now for, 4 years. And this is the first time in 4 years, so you count how many thousands of shows that is, that the subject has come up or that I've addressed it. So I think that's fair in 4 years for someone to raise the issue, or for people
sure.
who don't know the history to raise the issue. So what
and
about the previous
I
caller?
Have,
what about the previous?
The problem I have so often is that people say, oh, you Mormons, in the past you didn't extend the priesthood to black people. Now we do. Wouldn't it be more proper to say thank you? It's nice that you've come around. The church has never been racist.
Well,
the
question
it could well.
Here's the thing, Don. You identified yourself as an LDS Christian.
Do you
identify? I reject the Book of Mormon. I say it is not true revelation, and I say that Joseph Smith was a false prophet. Do you embrace me as a true fellow Christian? Heaven-bound, redeemed by the blood of Jesus, saved, believer, right in God's sight.
Well, you brought up a whole number of terms that would,
you identified yourself as a Christian. Someone who is in right relationship with God, part of the bride of Christ, part of the true church, as I believe myself to be. I reject the Book of Mormon. I reject Joseph Smith as a false prophet. Do you look at me as a non-believer or as a true believer?
I believe that you are a Christian in the same way that I'm a Christian.
All right, so you can be a Christian then and reject Joseph Smith as a false prophet and reject the Book of Mormon as a false document, not from above, and you can
Absolutely.
Be a true Christian. All right, so then...
But as I said...
And that's Orthodox Mormon doctrine.
You brought in a plethora of terms that would require a good deal of discussion before we could accurately say one thing or the other. If I were to say to you, I believe in Jesus Christ, do you consider me a Christian?
Yeah, I would ask you what you mean in believing in him.
Well, if you went through the entire creed... Well, I would have to ask you the same questions when you say,
Right. But my big issue, though, everything I've read in Mormon documents would say that if I reject Joseph Smith as a prophet and I reject the Book of Mormon, then my relationship with God is deeply questioned. Let me just tell you why I raised that, Don. It wasn't a setup question. And I'm happy to have, I've maybe done one or two shows about Mormonism in the history of the broadcast. I'm due to do another where I'll have someone on who differs, and then you can call and have a gracious interaction back and forth. But I just want to make this point. In my view, when Mormons go door to door and identify themselves as Christian, to me, there's a deception in that, because the goal is to proselytize that person away from their professed Christianity and make it clear that they need to become a Mormon. Why don't you knock on a door? Someone says, oh, I'm a born-again believer, I'm a Baptist. Why don't you say, oh, wonderful, praise the Lord, we're fellow Christians. Why do you try to proselytize that person? To me, there's an overall deception in this. There's something that's not revealing true colors up front. And therefore, because of that, rather than saying, hey, good move about the racial issues, and to me, like I said, in 4 years, it's never come up once. It's the first day, and that's why I asked for calls on either side of the issue to weigh in and clarify. But to me, the bigger issue is, if you recognize this person as a true Christian, why are you trying to proselytize them? Why not encourage them to be faithful to their church and keep reading the Bible? Why try to win them to now embrace additional revelation that the church has never known? Got a break, but Don, you're welcome to call any day these issues come up, and we'll discuss them.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown. your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Get into the line of fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Well, friends, it is Friday. You've got questions. We've got answers. Welcome to the line of fire. My delight, truly my delight to be with you. I'm sitting here doing the broadcast thinking, what a blast, what a joy, what a privilege. So thanks for joining us. You've got a question, anything in my area of expertise, Bible, Bible translation, church ministry, controversy, moral, cultural issues, apologetics. Thursdays we normally save for Israel, Jewish-related issues. But anything you want to ask me, 866-348-7884. I've also got a bunch of e-questions I want to tackle as well. Before I do that, I had a lot of people emailing me, posting on Facebook, a Chick-fil-A has caved in. The alderman Moreno, who blasted Chick-fil-A in Chicago, you're not coming into my city, released a report, and it's gotten out in lots of different websites, gay websites, other liberal websites, saying that Chick-fil-A has capitulated. They have agreed to stop funding, quote, anti-gay groups, and they've worked out an arrangement with acceptable to Alderman Moreno, and they're going to open a franchise in Chicago. So I'm getting bombarded with emails and different pro-family organizations saying, is this true? So my feeling was, well, let's just wait and see and find out more. Well, before the day was out, Dan Cathy, who's the COO, absolutely repudiated those reports, said they are completely false. No such agreement happened. And here's the truth. Here's the truth. As a company, they give tens of millions of dollars away, and a lot of it is feeding programs and helping people in different humanitarian ways, and they're always pro-marriage, family, whatever they can do to build that up. They also have the Wingate Foundation, which gives a small amount of the money to different organizations, and that may be what, $3, $4 million out of the tens of millions they give comes through that. And out of that, a tiny amount, $1,000 here, $1,500 there, $2,000, went to Exodus International, which helps people deal with unwanted same-sex attraction, or that had been an emphasis of theirs through the years, or Focus on the Family, or a National Organization for Marriage, because otherwise their emphasis is very clear in terms of where it's going. They've given a Fellowship of Christian Athletes, but that's been a tiny, tiny percentage. And that's the one that people say, oh, they give tens of millions of dollars to these anti-gay organizations, and now they've quit doing it. Well, the records, the financial records that Moreno looked at, as I understand it and as I've read reported, the financial records that he looked at, he was satisfied with that they weren't supporting, quote, supposedly anti-gay groups. That was the 2011 document reflecting giving in 2010. So this is who they've been. No change there. And Dan Cathy said, we didn't want to get involved in this controversy. We want to leave that to others. But we continue to hold to the Christian values we do. We continue to be pro-family. And that's who we are. And we treat everyone the same in our stores, regardless of race, ethnicity, gender, sexual orientation. We treat everyone the same, which is, of course, what they have done. So from what I can see thus far, this is another completely false and overblown report, and one meant to discredit them. They caved in, they capitulated so they could open another store in Chicago. Right. Sure. That makes sense. I question at the moment I saw it. Now, that being the case, if even they gave tiny amounts, $1,000, $1,500, and they're not going to give that because it's controversial, then they need to step up to the plate and say, we're not going to be ashamed of that. Come on. Is Starbucks ashamed of the fact that they openly support redefinition of marriage in Washington State? Did Jeff Bezos, the CEO of Amazon, apologize for giving, what, $2.5 million to try to redefine marriage in Washington State? Do CEOs of Microsoft or Apple or these other companies who give their megabucks, or Pepsi-Cola giving $500,000 at a time to gay activist organizations, do they have to apologize to the nation when they do that? So we need to expose that, and we need to encourage Chick-fil-A, hey, support who you want to support. But if there are those that are on the front lines fighting against the redefinition of marriage and you feel that's important, you do that too, and we've got your back. All right, back with your calls and emails. Stay with us.
Change the world. It's the Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown. Get into the Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
All right, it is Friday. I'm coming your way live, actually, from Valley Stream, Long Island, where I'll be ministering this weekend, and then spending time with my mom, who turns 90 on Tuesday. We've got family coming in from Maryland and North Carolina, some of the great-grandkids she's never seen face-to-face before, so we are thrilled to do this, and thanks to those who've been saying to wish her a happy 90th birthday from the listening audience. 866-348-7884. Here's a question from Rachel. Is it wrong for a married couple to use birth control? We love children, have a two-year-old who is the joy of our life and want more. Should God be the only one who controls the number of children a married couple has? I understand that if God wants to create, he will create no matter what birth control is used. We do not use the birth control pill for a number of personal reasons, but are other methods of birth control wrong? Should we even try and control the amount of children we have? We'd really appreciate your insight. Thank you. All right. First thing, you need to come to your definite convictions before the Lord. That's the first thing. Whatever I say cannot replace you really going to the Lord and getting his conviction. When you say God can create, you know, you can use all kinds of birth control and you can still get pregnant, that's happened to friends of ours. We know it can happen. But I can pretty well assure you that if you and your husband sleep in different rooms in the house and never get any closer than that, you're not going to get pregnant. In other words, there's not going to be another immaculate conception. So we do participate in the process. Let me take two sides to this. The first side is that as birth control made its way into America in the early 20th century, it mainly came in through groups that would be associated with a Planned Parenthood type of mentality. In 1960, when the birth control pill came in, that's one of the things that led to the sexual revolution, that sex was now separated from procreation. It could be used exclusively for recreation. And therefore, it has led to lots of other consequences in our society, lack of esteem for children, abortion as convenience is another method of birth control. We need to soberly recognize what some of the negative effects of birth control have been in our society. That's number one. And we must have a proper esteem for life and children as God intended. Now, we know there are people for whom birth control is a matter of life and death. There are physical conditions and physical issues, and you're intimate with your spouse, but pregnancy could be very dangerous physically and could be fatal. I understand that. Or you may not have the capacity to care for another child. I understand that issue. So there are cases where almost everyone would say birth control is correct. But in stating that, I'd encourage you to do this. Come to your conviction before the Lord and either say, Lord, give us as many children as you want us to have, which also means you have to have the ability to care for them. Not every mother can raise six little children at the same time and homeschool them and so on. So you need to have the support base that's necessary. It could be family, friends, whatever. But your position should be, Lord, if give us as many children as you want us to have and cooperate with him on that. If in conscience before God, you feel there's certain decisions you need to make, be it abstaining at certain times of the month, be it a certain method of birth control, that's between you and God. I know some of you listening say no birth control under any circumstances. God opens the womb, God closes it. Well, the fact that God closed the womb sometimes in judgment, the fact that he opened the womb in answer to prayer doesn't say necessarily that all forms of birth control are wrong. I would say make sure that you have a right attitude towards children and family, which seems to be the case, and your attitude is these are gifts from God and they bring life, all right? And within that context, work out if you are to participate in the process with the Lord in terms of should there be any pace to how many children that come, or do you leave that entirely in God's hands? I have to encourage you to work that out between you and the Lord, but as long as you have the right understanding of the importance of babies, children, the blessing that they are, the blessing of being able to reproduce, and then sort out the rest between you and the Lord. I really can't speak to that matter of conscience. Others may have a much more dogmatic view. That's perfectly fine. Maybe we'll do a whole show where we discuss it one day and get folks on different sides of the debate. I mentioned Chick-fil-A a moment ago. Let me go back to that. Miguel in Salt Lake City, Utah, thanks for calling the Line of Fire.
Hi, how are you doing? Just basically, I wanted to say I you know, when they had the pro-marriage thing where people were going to Chick-fil-A and buying sandwiches and everything, I went there with my girlfriend and I met another Christian friend there. And it was interesting because behind the counter, one of the kids that were working there, and I say kid because they were, you know, young, you could tell that he was either effeminate or he might have been homosexual. And I thought, wasn't that great that he's given somebody an opportunity to work? So in defense of Dan Cathy and Chick-fil-A, they're not anti-gay people. They're not anti
Right. You know. It's a complete myth. It's a complete mischaracterization. It's part of the flack that you get when you just say, I support marriage or family, or I differ with the redefinition of marriage. And by the way, the famous quote where Dan Cathy said, guilty as charged, he was not speaking specifically about being against same-sex so-called marriage. He was speaking for pro-family values. Now, he did say that we shake our fist at God when we tell him, you know, what's right and wrong about marriage, think we can do that. But, yeah, they have openly gay employees. That's never been an issue as long as the person can do their job. And they serve anyone. People say, oh, they're biased. They're not biased. And the fact is, if it's okay for one group to say we support redefining marriage, how in the world can it not be good? We've had 31 states out of 31 states vote to say marriage is the union of a man and woman, for a company to say we stand for biblical family values. And look, the neat thing to me is you'll never go into a fast food place where the people are more courteous, more gracious, and where you feel at home as a believer. But Miguel, thanks for sharing that and reminding us about that. 866-34-TRUTH. Courtney, our buddy in Chicago, how you doing today?
How you doing, Dr. Brown?
I'm doing very well, thanks.
Oh, okay. Well, I'm calling today in reference to a conversation that I had with a couple of my Jewish friends, actually a Jewish friend. And he brought up the issue of sickness in reference to Isaiah 53, verse 4, and how some modern English translations translate sickness as sin. How do you make that distinction? And also in verse 9, when it talks about him being buried, being assigned a grave with the wicked, that's because he was buried as a criminal, right? Well, he would have been buried as a criminal because he died as a criminal, right?
Right. Assigning his grave with the wicked, you're absolutely right. And even being crucified as a wicked man, and that's the contrast. But he was with the rich in his death, even though he was assigned a grave with the wicked. Right, exactly right understanding of that. As for verse 4, which interestingly, on a whole other level, someone called in about in the first hour, it is true that sometimes in the prophetic books, sickness can be a metaphor for sin, like Isaiah, the first chapter. Israel, the nation, is pictured as a body that was wounded and bruised and full of sores, and it's like beaten from head to toe. And that's a picture of the sin sickness of the nation. Or, for example, Jeremiah 6:14, the false prophets are rebuked. They superficially treat the fracture of my people, saying, shalom, shalom, when there is no shalom. All is well, when nothing is well. So, again, fracture, shever in Hebrew, can refer to a physical break of a bone, or it can refer to a disaster like the collapse of a city. So there's no question that sickness can sometimes be used as a metaphor for sin. But in the context of Isaiah 53, which uses so many sin languages, sin expressions, when it speaks of sickness, it's either speaking of suffering in general, or it is speaking of physical sickness. And the same in Isaiah 53:4, at the cost of his wounds, there's healing for us. The Hebrew word healing has a more comprehensive meaning of restoration. And at the cost of his wounds, there's restoration for us. First, spirit, but because of spiritual transformation, there's healing for the whole person. I explained in my book, Israel's Divine Healer, where I get into this in great, great depth and get into what the Hebrew says in great depth, that the prophetic vision was the whole man wholly healed. And if you think Israel goes into exile, the temple is destroyed, people are cut down in battle, there's famine. Why? Because of sin. Sin leads to these terrible national consequences. When there's repentance, there's restoration of the nation on every front. So the whole person wholly healed, beginning with the spiritual, working its way out into the whole of life. Thank you for the call,
now,
Courtney.
I
go ahead.
Very,
go
very
ahead.
Briefly, you just mentioned mentioned the whole heel thing, and if I'm not mistaken, in the Isaiah 53 context where it talks about the healing that's going to happen through his death, does it not use shalom?
Yeah. That's one of the chastisement that brought us peace, shalom. So that's okay. Wholeness there. Yeah, the chastisement that brought us peace is upon him. So exactly, that word shalom is used there too. And our full well-being comes through the cross. We experience the full reality of it with the resurrection and eternal life with God, but we get the first fruits of it in this world, complete forgiveness, restoration of fellowship to God, and often a complete dramatic manifestation of healing in many other ways. All right, back with more. Stay with us.
It's the Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
All right, we are racing towards the end of this hour, 2 hours flying by. Thanks for joining us, 866-348-7884. Beginning of this half hour, I addressed the idea that Chick-fil-A caved in, stopped funding, quote, anti-gay groups, made an agreement with Alderman Joe Moreno in Chicago so they can open a restaurant there. I questioned that when I heard it. Chick-fil-A has come out with a public statement saying these things are wrong, that this is false. Dan Cathy repudiated it. They came out with a statement saying we're doing the same thing we have always done. But just notice a call here. James in Akron, Ohio, you wanted to weigh in on the Chick-fil-A issue. Go ahead.
Well, yeah, what I read yesterday on my SBC Global homepage through AT&T was a newsletter about Chick-fil-A pulling funding. To the big one that stuck out to me was Focus on the Family. And what bothers me is, man, I enjoy Chick-fil-A. I enjoy Chick-fil-A.
It's bogus. It's a bogus report. It's a completely bogus report.
That's not a bogus newspaper. I mean, that's not like I wrote it.
It's a bogus report. Major newspapers carried it. How about this? Focus on the Family issued a public statement. Okay? I'm looking at it right now on citizenlink.com. And here is what Jim Daly, president of Focus on the Family, said. Dan and Bubba Cathy are my Christian brothers and good friends. They and their company have long shared Focus on the Family's commitment to helping build strong and thriving families, and they have in no way deviated from that deeply held and biblically inspired passions while working with the city of Chicago to open Chick-fil-A restaurants there. I feel bad the Cathys are having once again to endure media accounts mischaracterizing their values and charitable efforts, and unfortunately I know how they feel. And then he goes on. This is the president of Focus on the Family saying it's bogus. The fact is, out of their giving over the years, they probably gave 0.1% of money to Focus on the Family. It was a tiny donation. They happened to support tons of other Christian organizations and marriage organizations, and this is a false report that's been distributed. They made no agreement with Moreno. He has not produced a single document. And as WorldNet Daily mentioned, the financial records that Moreno looked at said, okay, you've capitulated, I agree. They were financial records from 2010, before the controversy ever came up. So will you believe Jim Daly, the president of Focus on the Family?
Yes, I do. That sets my mind at ease.
All right. Hey, I appreciate it. Now, I want to encourage them.
I appreciate the good news.
Yeah. And the fact is, James, you know, I'm getting all these reports yesterday, and I thought, okay, I'm seeing these major news outlets that are carrying it, and just thinking, they wouldn't use the word anti-gay. And you're telling me they made a compromised arrangement to open a store in Chicago? Then I read a report from a campus gay activist, and he said, I've met with the Chick-fil-A people a couple of times, and I cannot verify that they have made a change, and we may not know for a long time. The fact is, what I want to encourage them to do is, and they've always said, we're not involved in the political battle. That's our giving is going in one direction. That's where it's always gone. What's been mischaracterized, though, is that they gave tens of millions or multiple millions to National Organization for Marriage or Exodus International or Focus on the Family. Those happen when you actually look to them to be these gifts like $1,000 or $1,500, where they've given tens of million to other organizations. So go to CitizenLink.
Completely mischaracterized.
categorized. I feel sorry for them. That's very libelous, what's happening with them.
Yeah, and look, thank you for raising, James, thank you for calling in with that concern and raising where you got this from. Now, I'm sure there's going to be more that comes out in the coming days. And again, as I said a little earlier in the show, we want to encourage Chick-fil-A and other Christian companies. You know, Hobby Lobby, people are calling for a boycott now because they're suing the government over Obamacare, saying that it's requiring them to do things against their convictions as employers. I think God's going to continue to prosper and bless them. What we need to do is tell Christian organizations, hey, go ahead and give freely. Do what you feel is right. The other organizations do. They don't have to apologize when they fund gay activism with millions of dollars. Christian organizations shouldn't apologize. And James, keep digging into this, but go to citizenlink.com, and you can read that. But thank you for the call. Hey, once again, I seem to hear some messianic Jewish music in the background. You said keep it playing. Yeah, well, here's how you can keep it playing as much as you want. You can take it on the road with you. You can listen to it as you exercise or walk. You can play it for your congregation. Get the entire CD. Mark Chapinsky, famous with Israel's Hope, Paul Wilbur, and Rene Bloch, now with his first solo CD after many, many years, produced, recorded in Israel, and we bring it to you straight from Israel. The CD is actually called Israel's Hope, 14 wonderful messianic Jewish praise and worship songs, some toe tappers, some heartfelt plaintive prayer songs like this last one that drew me in. I wanted to hear it continue. $15 postage paid for the CD. Order it today if you can help with an additional donation to hold our hands up as we reach out to the lost sheep of the house of Israel. That would be awesome. 1-800-278-9978. That's 1-800-278-9978. One more time, 1-800-278-9978. We've got some special broadcasts that'll be coming your way next week. As always, we'll be tackling the controversies, we'll be diving headlong into scriptural issues, and we'll do our best to glorify Jesus. He is central. He is the one who matters. It is God's will, God's purpose, God's plan, that in everything he has the preeminence. And we want to encourage that with all our heart as we see these days unfold, days of unprecedented wickedness, days of unprecedented harvest, days of unprecedented opportunity for us to make the gospel known. Remember, my website is askdrbrown.org, askdrbrown.org. We have hundreds of hours of free resources for you there that will help you, that will bless you, that will aid you, that will minister to you. You can watch debates I've had with rabbis, agnostics, gay activists. You can listen to many, many messages, hundreds of messages, read articles that will edify you. And of course, the entire archives, years of programming here on the Line of Fire, available to you on our website, askdrbrown.org. Click on the Line of Fire. And if you have a comment, if you differ, if there's an issue you would like to raise, then please do so by going to askdrbrown.org and clicking on the Line of Fire. If you want to follow me on Facebook, askdrbrown on Facebook, you can interact there. Or Twitter, Dr. Michael L. Brown. Make sure you get the two L's in there, Michael L., Dr. Michael L. Brown on Twitter. My bottom line today: there's often a fine line between truth and error. There's often a fine line between deception and sound doctrine. And that which keeps us on the right path is not our feelings or emotions, but the unchangeable, eternal Word of Truth, God's holy word.